All right, so we're diving deep today, you and I, into something that I think a lot of people find really fascinating. And honestly, it's a part of the Bible that people talk about all the time. 1 Corinthians chapter 7.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, we're looking at verses 7b all the way through 40. We're trying to get to the core of what Paul is saying about these really fundamental questions about sex and marriage. And we're using these lecture notes from Dr. Gary Metters. They're super detailed. So
yeah, they're great notes. This whole section of Corinthians, it's kind of surprising, actually, how much it gets into, you know, like different situations that people might find themselves in or be wondering about. It's not just, you know, are you single or married? It gets into like what it means to be single. It talks about marriage dynamics.
Yeah.
It even touches on stuff like remarriage after you've lost a spouse and the whole thing about being married to someone who has totally different beliefs than you.
And you know, we got to remember that when we're looking at something written this long ago, especially something as personal and as, you know, relational as this, the meaning isn't always super clear right off the bat.
No, it's not.
So we always got to keep in mind that scholars look at these passages in different ways.
Right.
There isn't always just like one right answer.
Yeah. I mean, like, think about it. The original context that this was written in, the way the Greek language works, all of that is super important to figuring out what Paul was actually trying to say.
Okay, so let's just dive right into it.
Let's.
I want to start with this idea of singleness versus marriage as a gift. We're looking at verses 7b through 9 here.
Okay.
And Paul says that he wishes that everybody was like him. And most people think that means, you know, unmarried. But then he's quick to say that each of us has our own, you know, unique gift from God.
Mm-hmm.
What's the main takeaway for you in just this opening thought?
It's interesting, right? Like, the thing that really stands out to me is that Paul, even though he has a personal preference, he doesn't say that it's the only way or even that it's the best way to be. He gets that God makes each person different and kind of equips us differently. What this tells me is that, you know, whether you feel drawn towards being single or you're really wanting to be married, neither one of those is automatically better in God's eyes. It's more about, you know, how you use whatever disposition you have to serve him.
And it's interesting, too, because he's talking about the unmarried and widows here. And Dr. Metters points out something kind of cool about the Greek word for unmarried. It's agamwa.
Right.
And it isn't as specific as we might think in English. It's not just people who've never been married. It can also include like men who've lost their wives. So when you see unmarried here, it's more of a broad category.
Yeah, that's a detail that's easy to miss if you're not, you know, paying attention to the original language. I mean, they have a specific word for widows in Greek, but there's not a separate one for widowers. So linguistically, they're kind of lumped in with the people who've never been married at all. That suggests that Paul's probably speaking to a bigger group here, you know, both men and women who've been married but then lost their spouse, and also people who've just never been married.
Right. And Paul's advice is pretty straightforward. He says it's good for them to stay unmarried, like he is. But if they find that they just can't control their desires, then marriage is the better option. He even uses that vivid phrase, burning with passion.
Yeah. It is better to marry than to burn with passion.
What does that tell you about how Paul viewed, like, human nature and desires?
Well, I mean, he's not condemning those feelings, is he? He's saying they're real, you know, they're powerful, and marriage is actually a good way to handle them. It's a healthy way. It's the right way. And what that says to me is that Paul's being realistic. Our physical needs, our emotional needs, they matter, and we should really consider those when we're thinking about relationships.
And this is where it starts to hit home, right? It makes you think about your own life. Paul's not laying down a rule that says one path is more spiritual than the other. What he's saying is that, you know, whether you feel like you're more suited to being single or you really want to be married, you should think about what you're actually capable of, what you feel called to, not just what you think you're supposed to do.
I think that's a really important point. It's about understanding how God has made you as an individual, not about feeling like you have to fit into some kind of mold. And then once you understand how God has made you, you can ask yourself, okay, how can I best honor God in my situation right here, right now?
Okay, so moving on. Verses 8 through 16, Dr. Metters points out that Paul keeps coming back to this idea of, you know, remain as you are, like stay in the marital situation that you're currently in. Why do you think he gives this advice? What are some of the reasons behind it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Dr. Metters makes a really good point when he talks about how practical this advice is, like especially for widows. Think about it. If you're a widow, remarrying might not be as straightforward as you'd think. There's all this stuff to consider. family dynamics, inheritance, things like that.
That's a really good point. Like, if you're a widow and you have adult children, they might be worried about what happens to their inheritance if you remarry later in life.
Exactly. It's not just about, you know, the emotional side of things. It's about being realistic about how life works.
So when Paul uses words like good in this section, and he says it's good to stay unmarried or good to marry if you can't control yourself, he might actually be talking about what's most practical for people rather than making a judgment about what's morally better.
Right, exactly. It's about finding a way forward that actually works for your life.
And he also keeps coming back to that word agamois, reminding us that it doesn't always have just one meaning. It can refer to all kinds of single people, unmarried men, widowed men, divorced women, even just young women later in the chapter. So it's not a nice, neat little box.
That's a good point.
You got to really pay attention to the context to figure out who Paul's talking to.
Yeah, yeah. This is where it's helpful to remember that, you know, reading and interpreting ancient texts, it's not like a simple translation exercise.
Yeah.
The meaning of a word can change depending on the context. And, you know, some scholars like Witherington really try to make this clear in their translations. They'll use different, more specific words depending on who Paul seems to be talking to.
You know, it's kind of hard not to wonder about Paul himself, right? I mean, here he is giving all this advice about marriage and singleness.
Yeah.
And Dr. Metters mentions that as a Jewish leader and probably a Pharisee, he was most likely married at some point because that's just what people did. But clearly, when he wrote this letter, he wasn't married anymore. Why do you think that was?
Well, honestly, we just don't know for sure.
Yeah.
He could have been widowed. Or, you know, maybe his wife decided to leave him after he converted to Christianity. I mean, that would have been a huge deal back then.
Right.
It could have totally split families apart.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter exactly why Paul was single. What matters is that he was speaking from experience.
So it sounds like this remain as you are principle is mainly aimed at people who are already in a particular situation, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It's not saying that absolutely nobody should ever get married or get divorced. It's more about like making the most of where you are right now.
Right. It's like saying, look, you're here right now, so how can you serve God best in this moment?
Right.
It's about finding contentment. It's about seeking God's will for your life right now in the place where you are. You don't have to wait for some, you know, relationship status change to live a fulfilling spiritual life.
I like that. All right, so let's move on to verses 10 and 11. Now, this is where Paul gets really specific about how permanent he thinks marriage is supposed to be. And he's very clear that this isn't just his own opinion. He's actually referencing what he calls the dominical tradition.
Right, the teachings of Jesus himself.
Exactly. What does that tell you? Why is that distinction important?
Well, it tells you that Paul's not just, you know, making this stuff up as he goes along.
Right.
When he says, not I, but the Lord, he's grounding what he's saying in the words of Jesus himself. What this means is that for you, for anyone who's a Christian, those words should carry a lot of weight. Jesus took marriage very seriously. He saw it as a lifelong commitment, a sacred bond.
And his instructions are really clear too, right? A wife shouldn't separate from her husband. And if she does, she has to stay single or try to reconcile. And husbands aren't allowed to divorce their wives either. That's pretty firm, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it shows you just how important marriage was to Jesus. This was not something to be taken lightly. He intended for it to be a lasting union.
Dr. Metters makes a really interesting point here. He says that Paul seems to be relying on what scholars call the purest versions of the gospel tradition,
Okay. Specifically
Mark and Luke. And in those gospels, Jesus' teachings on divorce are like super absolute. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't mention Matthew. And Matthew's gospel includes that exception clause, you know, except for sexual immorality.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you think Paul leaves that out? I mean, is that significant?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
And it's one that scholars have been debating for a long time.
Right.
Dr. Metters, he thinks that maybe Paul saw the more absolute teachings in Mark and Luke as like the standard, the norm. Or maybe he had a specific way of understanding that sexual immorality clause. Like maybe he didn't think it automatically meant you could remarry in every situation.
Mm-hmm.
What this shows us, you know, for anyone who's reading the Bible, is that even within the New Testament itself, there are nuances. There are different perspectives on complex issues like divorce. And we need to be really careful, really thoughtful when we're trying to figure out what it all means and how it applies to our lives.
You can't just like take one verse and run with it. You really have to consider everything.
Yeah, you do. It's about having strong convictions about the main principles, but also being humble enough to recognize that applying them isn't always simple or straightforward.
All right, let's get into verses 12 through 16 now. This is what Dr. Metters calls the Pauline explanation.
Okay.
And it's about marriages where one person is a believer and the other person isn't. And Paul starts off by saying, I, not the Lord. Which, as Dr. Metters points out, this doesn't mean that what he's about to say is less important. But it does mean that he doesn't have, like, a direct quote from Jesus to go off of for this specific situation. How is Paul approaching this issue, then?
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Jesus didn't personally address every single situation that people might find themselves in.
Right.
But he did lay down some general principles.
Yeah.
And what Paul's doing here is taking those principles and applying them to a new challenge.
Okay.
Which, for you, if you're thinking about the early church and how it worked, that's a really important thing to understand. You know, the leaders, they had the Holy Spirit to guide them as they were figuring out how to handle these new situations that Jesus hadn't directly addressed.
So what does Paul say?
Well, basically, he says that if you're a believer and you're married to someone who isn't, and they're willing to stay in the marriage, you shouldn't try to divorce them just because of their beliefs.
Right.
Like, just because your spouse isn't a Christian, that doesn't mean you have to end the marriage.
I mean, that's really countercultural, isn't it? Like, especially today, people talk a lot about needing to have the same spiritual beliefs as your partner.
Yeah, it is. But Paul's making it clear that if you were already married to someone when you became a Christian, your different faiths don't automatically mean you have to split up. He's saying that the marriage bond is still super important. And if the other person's okay with staying together, then you should stay together.
And then he goes on to talk about this idea of the unbelieving spouse and even their kids being sanctified because they're with a believer. And Dr. Metters points out that this doesn't mean they're automatically saved.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about, like, the environment they're in, the influence of the Christian spouse. Like, the non-Christian spouse is in a position where they might actually experience God or get to know God through their believing partner. What does that mean, then, for people who are in these, you know, mixed faith marriages?
Well, it's encouraging, right?
Yeah.
Because it means that even though there are challenges, you're in this really unique position to show your spouse what it means to follow Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You can create an environment where they might feel God's presence.
Your life becomes a kind of witness.
Exactly. You're living out your faith right there in your home, in the most intimate relationship you have. That's powerful stuff.
And of course, he addresses the situation where the non-Christian spouse decides to leave. And he says, in that case, let it be so. The believer is not bound. But, and this is important, Dr. Metters warns against assuming that this automatically means that the believer is free to remarry. Why do you think he cautions against that?
Because, I mean, if you really look at what Paul's saying, it seems like he's more focused on the fact that the unbeliever has left and the believer shouldn't feel guilty about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're released from that obligation to make things work.
Okay.
And Paul, he's all about peace, right? So he's saying, you know, don't try to force them to stay. Let them go and find your own peace. But remember what he said earlier about marriage being permanent? He's not directly saying that you can just go ahead and remarry. It's more nuanced than that.
I think that example he gives really drives this point home. You know, the one about the pastor advising a wife whose husband doesn't like that she's going to church so much because it's interfering with his business.
Oh, yeah.
And the advice is basically, you know, prioritize honoring the marriage, prioritize the unbelieving spouse.
Yeah. It's about putting the relationship first.
And he even says marriage trumps claimed spirituality. Unless, of course, there's abuse or something dangerous going on.
Right, of course. Safety comes first.
So what do you think that example tells us about how we should apply these ancient teachings today?
Well, it's a good example of how we need to be wise, right?
Yeah.
It's not always about following some rule blindly. We need to be discerning. We need to make sure that we're acting in a way that's actually good for everyone involved. And sometimes that means putting aside our own desires, even our religious practices, to protect the marriage and the people in it.
All right, let's move on to verses 17 through 24. Paul goes back to the remain as you are idea here. So it's like it's a theme running through this whole chapter, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think he keeps coming back to this?
I think at its core, it's about being content with where you are in life
mm-hmm.
and finding ways to serve God in your current circumstances.
Okay.
Dr. Metters calls it the principle of providence. It's like trusting that God has put you where you are for a reason. And what that means for you, for me, for anyone, is that we should focus on being faithful in the here and now. not always wishing we were somewhere else in some other situation.
But he does say that, you know, not everyone can actually just stay as they are.
Of course.
Some people have really strong desires. And it's not just sexual desire, right? There's this basic human need for companionship, for partnership. So it's not like he's ignoring the realities of human experience.
Yeah. He's presenting remain as you are as a good general principle. But he knows that it's not a one-size-fits-all rule. People are different, their needs are different, and their circumstances are different.
Okay, last section, verses 25 through 40. This is where Paul gives specific advice about, well, the translations are kind of all over the place. Some say the betrothed, some say virgins. That's that Greek word, parthenos.
Right.
Which Dr. Metters points out can mean a couple of different things. It can refer to people who've never been married, or it can refer to people who are engaged. And Paul starts off by saying that he doesn't have a direct command from the Lord on this. He's giving his own judgment based on what he calls the present crisis. What's the present crisis that he's talking about?
That's a question that's caused a lot of discussion. You know,
right.
Some people think he's talking about something local, like a famine or persecution. Most scholars think he's talking about something much bigger. His belief that Jesus was going to return really, really soon. This is what's called the eschatological view.
Okay.
And honestly, for anyone trying to understand this section, it's super important to keep that in mind.
Right. Yeah.
Because it really shapes the advice that he's giving.
So knowing that Paul thought the world was about to end, what does he say? What advice does he give?
Well, he says that it's good to stay as you are.
Oh, okay.
Like, if you're engaged, you don't have to break it off. But if you're not married, don't feel like you need to rush into it.
Right.
But he's also clear that getting married isn't a sin.
Right.
He's not saying that marriage is wrong.
So what's his reasoning here, then? Why does he say it's better to stay single if you can?
Well, he basically says that marriage comes with its own set of problems.
It's hard.
Right. And he doesn't want people to go through those difficulties if they don't have to, because in his mind, Jesus is coming back any minute. So who has time for that?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you can't help but wonder what his advice would have been if he had known that Jesus wasn't coming back for another couple thousand years.
Yeah, for real.
Okay. And then we get to these really confusing verses, 36 through 38, especially that bit about who's trying to act honorably towards the virgin. Is it a father worried about his daughter? Is it a man worried about his fiancée? I mean, different translations have different answers. It's a mess.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, honestly, it's one of those places where we have to admit that we just don't fully understand the cultural context anymore.
Right.
Like, there might have been social customs or expectations that we just aren't aware of. And then you've got these conditional clauses in verse 36. And the Greek word for if can have like two different meanings.
Oh, no.
It can be talking about something that's already a fact, or it can be talking about a hypothetical situation. So, yeah, it's hard to say for sure what Paul meant here. I think the takeaway for anyone reading this is to just be humble, you know.
Yeah.
Realize that there might be multiple valid interpretations.
And then we get to verse 38, and it's pretty clear. He who marries the virgin does right, but he who does not marry her does better. But Dr. Metters is really careful to point out that better here doesn't mean morally better.
Right.
It's more about what's practical, given the whole, you know, end of the world thing that Paul was expecting.
Yeah, that's super important. Because otherwise, it sounds like Paul's saying that being single is some kind of spiritual achievement. And that's not what he's saying at all.
Right. Right. He's just saying that given the situation, given how he understands things, remaining single is probably the easier path.
Exactly. Less drama, less to worry about when the world's about to end.
Okay, and lastly, Paul talks about widows in verses 39 and 40. And he says that they are free to remarry after their husband dies.
Right, death ends the marriage bond.
But he adds this caveat.
Yeah.
They should only remarry in the Lord.
Yeah.
So to another Christian.
Yeah.
And he says that a widow is happier if she stays single, but he doesn't command it. He even acknowledges that especially younger widows will probably remarry, and that's totally fine.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Especially for younger widows, life goes on.
So what do you think that tells us about Paul? I mean, does he seem really rigid about all of this?
I don't think so. I think, you know, looking at everything he says in this chapter, he's trying to find a balance. He's acknowledging that remarriage is a legitimate option for widows, while also, you know, maybe suggesting that staying single might be a simpler path, especially for older widows, maybe, in that culture.
Right.
He's giving advice, but he's also respecting people's choices and recognizing that everyone's situation is different.
Okay, so we've just spent a lot of time digging deep into 1 Corinthians 7. And wow, Paul's advice on sex and marriage is complicated, isn't it?
It is. It's rooted in a specific time and place. It's influenced by Paul's own personal views and, like we said, by his understanding of how God was working in the world.
So for those of us listening, what are the main things we should take away from all of this?
Well, I think one of the big takeaways is that both singleness and marriage can be good gifts from God.
Okay.
And, you know, that remain as you are principle, it's really practical in a lot of situations. It's not about being trapped. It's about finding contentment and serving God wherever you are. And we also see how important marriage was to Jesus. He saw it as a sacred bond. And that holds true even when you're in a tough situation, like a mixed faith marriage.
Right.
And we can't forget that, you know, Paul thought the world was about to end. That really colored his advice.
Yeah, for sure. It's hard not to think about how differently we might approach these things, knowing that we have a lot more time.
It is.
So what do you think? I mean, how do these teachings apply to our lives today, to our relationships?
That's a great question. I mean, we haven't tried to give specific answers about, you know, what to do in every situation.
Yeah.
But those underlying principles that Paul's talking about, they definitely give us a lot to think about.
They do. It's almost like the starting point, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. This isn't the end of the conversation. There's so much more to explore here, so much wisdom to unpack. I mean, we encourage everyone to keep studying, keep reflecting, keep wrestling with these ideas.
And speaking of continuing the conversation, you know, our next deep dive is going to pick up right where we left off. We're going even deeper into the Bible's teachings on marriage and divorce. So definitely tune in for that.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.